Listen to the voices of our world.
Many towns had at their city limits signs that said, quote, "Nigger, don't let the sun go down on you," in, let's say, Oildale, California.
If you think the struggle is over, think again.
You are choosing to raise your kids in an all-white environment, which says to them, this is the right way to live.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Hurricane Katrina, when all is said and done, was both massively destructive and profoundly instructive. That is, if we want to learn. Depending upon whom you listen to, we may have finally learned there is such a thing as global warming, and it is taking effect. We may have learned not to rebuild in areas below sea level and to build levees with the permanence to withstand Category 5 storms. And we may have learned that there is still a Grand Canyon deep trench between rich and poor America, that which side of that trench you stand on decides your chances of survival, and that the people on the deprived side of that trench are overwhelmingly Black. Today we'll talk with the author of Sundown Towns, A Hidden Dimension of American Racism, James Lowen, and with Jacqueline Berrien, Associate Director Counsel for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root.
The man who wrote the song Strange Fruit, Abel Meeropol, was white. The strange fruit he wrote of, hanging from poplar trees, were the bodies of lynched Black men and women. Lynchings, or extrajudicial hangings, named for Virginia Justice of the Peace Charles Lynch, 1736 to 96, began to peak after the Civil War, mainly used against Blacks presumed to have committed crimes against whites. Since 1882, more than 4,700 persons have been lynched, the great majority of them African Americans, 230 in 1892 alone. For comfort, we remind ourselves that this stuff is ancient history. The New York Historical Society has a slavery exhibition that includes auction posters. One reads, "A parcel of young, able-bodied Negro men, one of whom is a cooper by trade, two Negro wenches, two girls, one 12 years, the other 16, and a good seamstress." I guess wondering what a cooper is, a person who repairs barrels, saves us from imagining what it would be like to be sold to one buyer and have your child sold to another. Again, relax. Ancient history, remember? And all that progress in the 60s and 70s, the marches, the boycotts, Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, Brown versus the Board of Education, the Voting Rights Act. Right, we fixed it all, right? Undeniably, we have made some very important moves in the right direction. But no, we did not fix it all. The Ku Klux Klan is still scheduling marches, and there is an up-and-coming musical duo called Prussian Blue, white supremacist, twin female, blonde blue-eyed teens named Lynx and Lamb. And commenting on the masses in the New Orleans Superdome, former First Lady Barbara Bush said, "A lot of these people are underprivileged, so this is working out well for them." Now, I'm sure she somehow meant well, but how does penning up a gazillion storm-tossed homeless in a shelter with no functioning bathrooms, no water, no food, and no medicine work out well for anyone? Most of New Orleans stranded were the poor, and most of them happened to be Black. So there's a lot more in our society we could be fixing. James Lowen, professor emeritus at the University of Vermont and the author of the bestseller Lies My Teacher Told Me, has recently published Sundown Towns, A Hidden Dimension of American Racism. The book documents the shocking tradition of mostly Northern American towns and suburbs ensuring a whites-only policy by posting signs at their city limits that read, "Nigger, don't let the sun go down on you," in, and then the name of the town. Here's Kathy Golden with James Lowen.
Sundown Towns is about towns that had, well, you give us what the sign used to say.
A sundown town is a town that for decades was all white on purpose. And I have to say some of them still are. And they get the nickname from the fact that many towns had at their city limits signs that said, typically, quote, "Nigger, don't let the sun go down on you" in, let's say, Oildale, California, or Pena, Illinois, or whichever town we're talking about. They came about between 1890 and 1940, most of them, except for sundown suburbs. Now, it turns out that 80% of all suburbs in the United States were founded as sundown towns. That is, were founded white only. The term wasn't used in the East especially, and it wasn't very much used in suburbia, but it was the same policy. And the sundown suburbs went in between about 1910 and 1968. They were still forming at least as late as 1968, and some of them still haven't stopped their policies.
On what legal basis would people be able to get away with this as late as they were getting away with it?
Isn't that a good question? And it turns out that there was no legal basis in a way, and then in another way there was. During this period, there was only about one really positive decision on race relations coming out of the Supreme Court, and it turns out it was exactly on this topic. In 1917, Buchanan v. Worley, and the decision was this. Many southern cities, and I have to include cities as far north as Baltimore and St. Louis and Louisville, passed ordinances that stated no black person or family can move to, live on, or rent on a majority white block, and no white family can do the same on a majority black block, although they weren't going to disturb people now living there. Well, of course, quite rapidly, that would have led to complete apartheid in any city passing such an ordinance, because if you had a 60-40 white block, let's say, pretty soon all the black folks on it are going to eventually move or die, and no more blacks can ever live there because it's majority white. So you would end up with no interracial areas in the city at all. Well, the Supreme Court in 1917 ruled these ordinances unconstitutional because white rights were interfered with, and that's the right to sell your property to the highest bidder. In other words, quite simple, let's suppose you lived on an interracial block and your house was worth maybe $100,000, and white folks were offering you $100,000, but a black family really wanted to live on a mixed block and was offering you $110,000. Well, then you're screwed out of $10,000 by this law, so a white right was interfered with, and so it was ruled unconstitutional. Well, obviously, if they ruled unconstitutional such a segregation ordinance that seems to be even-handed on its face, they would certainly have had to rule unconstitutional these sundown ordinances. I got an email just 5 minutes ago. Let me read it to you. Beloit, Kansas, once had a law prohibiting blacks from spending the night. Recently, I noticed a black person when I visited the town. I originate from the area. I wonder if the old law is still on the books or if it was repealed. If it was repealed, who took leadership for the action? When did it happen? My parents, 75 years of age, remember the law when they were young. Well, that's the kind of emails or phone calls or conversations that I have all the time. I wouldn't say that Beloit, Kansas is a sundown town based on that one email, but I suspect it almost surely was, and I would want corroboration from the parents. How do you know this? And that's what I find all across the North. And when I went to write this book, I thought I'd have 10 of these towns in Illinois. That's my home state. And I was going to do a little more research there than in any other single state. And I thought I'd have maybe 50 across the country. Instead, I wound up with 472 in Illinois alone, which means probably something like 10,000 across the country. It's actually a majority of all towns in the North, I suspect. Certainly a majority of all towns in Illinois. A majority in Indiana, a majority, I think, in Oregon. The only place that these were not the commonest thing to do was in the traditional South. In Mississippi, for instance, I've done an exhaustive search. I've located 6 sundown towns at 6 in Mississippi compared to 472 in Illinois.
Did you come across any of the actual signs, and do folks have those signs?
I have at least 150 to 200 towns where I have solid oral history about the signs. That is, people telling me they remember the sign, here's what it said, here's exactly where it was on the highway, and so on. And yet, I can't find a single photo of any of the signs. I go to historical societies, local libraries, and typically I get back the response, why on earth would we keep that? Well, it's only history. One of the defining characteristics of your town or your city for many decades, yes, you should have kept it. I actually think that some of the signs are still in existence. I'm told that the sign in Pekin, Illinois, for instance, is in the custody and care of the local Ku Klux Klan. But I don't know the address. Plus, I'm not sure they'd cooperate with me.
No, they didn't cooperate with us a few years ago when we tried to interview them for something. But I'll bet you a few of those signs exist in some attics somewhere.
I think they are. And in fact, I followed down lead after lead. A person from Manning, Iowa, for instance, his grandmother had a photo of their sign in their family scrapbook. And just last summer, he was going to go visit the house. She's recently gone to a nursing home. And get the scrapbook and send me the picture or send me a copy of it, only to find that as she went to the nursing home, to her family's later distress, she got rid of all of her old scrapbooks. And so I missed that one. I think now that the book is out, people will come forward and say, well, I've got a photo. I did find one sign itself, and that sign is from Connecticut. And it was purchased by the rather famous guy who collects stuff relating to race. His name is Jimmy Allen, and he collected all the lynching photos and lynching postcards that make up this rather famous exhibit called Without Sanctuary, an exhibit of lynching photos that has gone all around the United States. He collected this sign. He bought it in New York City, and all he knows about it is that it's from Connecticut. And the sign is now in a museum in Georgia, and so I got them to take a picture of it, and that's now the first picture we have of a Sundown Town sign. But this sign is much nicer because, see, in Connecticut, they're much more polite. And so it says, whites only within city limits after dark.
You wrote something about realtors and that point system for swarthiness.
Yes, for swarthiness. There's five different communities that are collectively known as Grosse Pointe, Michigan. They are wealthy suburbs just northeast of Detroit. And in the 50s and 60s, they kept blacks out. The realtors used a point system. You got up to 100 points. Or a combination of things. For instance, I think it was 10 points for your complexion. And if you were swarthy, you got maybe 0 or 2 of those 10 points. If you were blonde, you got 10 of the 10 points. Same kind of thing for your occupation. Same thing if you spoke with an accent, you would get 0 points out of 10 for that part. Jews had to have 80 points, as I remember it, to move in. Regular folks, as it were, had to have 60. Blacks and Asians weren't even counted. They didn't even amass points. They had no chance of getting in. And when this hit the nation's press, it actually went into even Time magazine, the state of Michigan, I believe it was the Secretary of State, declared it illegal, whereupon the legislature met and passed a law saying it wasn't illegal. If you choose to live in an all-white town, now, of course, you may do it for other reasons. Your employment might take you there, or if it's an all-white suburb, you are choosing perhaps because of its prestige or perhaps because of its excellent school system, not directly because of race. But race is linked to prestige, and we have to think about that. And you are choosing to raise your kids then in an all-white environment, which says to them, this is the right way to live. It's good to live away from black folks. So I think it's possible to come out non-racist or even anti-racist from such an environment, but it's not easy. Although integration and living with other people is kind of uncomfortable sometimes and we have to work at it, I think it's worth doing.
Thank you again, James Loewen. The name of the book is Sundown Towns.
Thank you for having me.
Will we ever act as if all people are created equal? Let us know what you think. Email us. Go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOWLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.